Very good.
So one of the things they warn you about when you're training to become a pastor is not to let yourself get stuck only preaching your favorite texts, your pet texts, as they call them. But I figure, I'm only 2 years in. I don't preach every Sunday, so I should get at least one go-around on my favorite texts, right? They're not really your they're not your pet texts until you at least preach them once. So, full disclosure, this is one of my favorite texts in the Bible. 2 Corinthians 12, 5 through 10. And I'll get to why in a bit, but in order to get there, we have to go through some straight up, down and dirty Bible study. So let's get to it. The Apostle Paul had a long and complex relationship with the church at Corinth. He sent them many letters. He visited multiple times. He was actually one of the people who laid the groundwork for the foundation for the church to grow. And only a few of the correspondences that we have are preserved in the New Testament. And we know that the Corinthians wrote back, but we don't have those letters. We just have the one side of that conversation, and not all of it at that. Now, we know that at one point in the relationship between Paul and the Corinthians, there was a major conflict. There was a major falling out. Based on what he says in 2 Corinthians, we know that Paul sent them a passionate, strongly worded letter, and they did not appreciate it. They felt it was too much. It came on too strong. Perhaps you've wondered, as we read the text in the Bible, which, you know, enjoin their listeners and readers to be more humble, to be more unified, you might have wondered, how was this received in the early church? And what we know from 2 Corinthians is that at least some of the time, they responded the way we might expect them to respond. They did not like it. So perhaps to mend fences, Paul visits in person. But instead of making things better, the visit makes things worse. Everything falls apart. The Corinthians aren't impressed by Paul. They find him uninspiring. They find his oratory, his public speaking, to be lacking. And it seems that he had some kind of physical ailment or something about his body that they found off-putting, some kind of disease or deformity. So they start comparing him to other leaders who had come through, who were much more impressive, who spoke of visions that they had of ascending into heaven and meeting God. Those kinds of visions were very common as appeals to authority in that time. Many people would state that as a way of verifying that their message from God was true. Paul sarcastically refers to these opponents, these competitors to which he's being compared, as super apostles. And Paul just doesn't measure up in the Corinthians' eyes to these super apostles. The Corinthians, it seems, did not mince their words. They told him he was not charismatic, he was unimpressive, besides which, he had suffered so many trials and physical ailments in his life. How could they possibly accept him as an envoy of God? Wouldn't God send someone more compelling? Wouldn't God preserve God's own apostle from the absurdly large amount of trials and illness and suffering that Paul faced? It's every visiting preacher or new pastor's worst nightmare to show up and be compared to others and found sorely lacking. So Paul responds to this hurtful exchange with what he calls a tearful letter, which we don't have. We don't know what was in that tearful letter. But he was apparently deeply wounded by this conflict. And a good chunk of 2 Corinthians is Paul's attempt to defend himself, to defend his authority as an apostle and reconcile this relationship that has gone so wrong. And these verses that we read today are the heart of that response, the core of his attempt to defend his authority and his response to the hurtful words of the Corinthians. He makes a very bold and risky claim. He says, all of those things that you think disqualify me from being an apostle, the weaknesses, the illnesses, the trials, those are what make me an apostle of God. Those are my claims to authority. He turns their logic on its head. It's a tremendously creative response. Paul is laying his vulnerabilities bare and saying, here I am, broken, weak, and an instrument of God. Not in spite of his brokenness, but through his brokenness. Because God's grace works through the broken places. That's my favorite part. That's why I love this text. Now, I want to make this distinction because it can cause confusion. God's not saying Paul is not saying God caused his sufferings. He actually goes a bit out of his way to be ambiguous about where the suffering came from. He uses a passive. He says, a thorn was given to me. Elsewhere in his writings, he'll say that suffering comes as a consequence of the work that he does, like being thrown in prison because of preaching the gospel, or being shipwrecked as he traveled across the Mediterranean to visit different churches. Paul's point here is that God works through weakness. Paul throws out the Corinthians' logic that said greatness is a sign of God's favor. He says, when I am hurting, God is moving. When I am in prison, God is with me. Through my weakness, God's power is at work. It's the same logic, or perhaps illogic, of the song that Kyle Ann sang for us just now. I'm not going to sing it as she did, but let me repeat a bit of it. As the thunder and the hardwood settled back into its place, God removed the veil to show the scars across their face. And some folks prayed in reverence, and some folks prayed in fear, as all the shades of chaos in the glass became a mirror. The man rebuilds the stained glass in jagged imperfections, with blood stains in the red and teardrops in the blue. And in that imperfect monstrosity of color, everyone saw their own struggles laid bare. That's how I feel when I read these words of Paul. My own imperfections and struggles laid bare. And not only laid bare, but held in grace. So this summer, we have been exploring various kinds of art as sites of God's work. For me, the written word has always been the vehicle of powerful artistic expressions of grace. Denny Schmidt's lyrics in stained glass and Paul's letter are two fine examples of that, God's grace working through the written word. And to me, these two pieces are powerful because they put weakness front and center. They use a place of pain as their creative wellspring. And they create, through their words, images of suffering transformed. When I am weak, then I am powerful. Paul's goal in 2 Corinthians is not primarily therapeutic. He's not trying to heal himself or even this community. His goal is defending his apostolic authority. Still, I hope that for Paul, claiming his weakness in this very creative way helped him heal from the wounds that conflict had caused him. Wounds on our bodies are sites of tremendous creativity. When we get a cut, the blood clot forms a scab, which is like a little protective tent that keeps the wound from getting infected. And then red blood cells come and they create this hard tissue, and then under that there's this softer tissue that gets created, and then over that skin cells start to build new skin cells, and all the while blood vessels are building new cells to come together and rejoin what had been broken apart. It's amazing. A little cut on your body, all of the work that goes into knitting it back together, all of the creation that goes into healing it. I once saw the Reverend Dr. James Forbes, who is one of the greatest Baptist preachers of our age, describe how the body healed itself. And he was so overcome with joy at describing this process that he spontaneously broke into a praise dance in the middle of his explanation. That is how moved he was by this tremendous, although tremendously small, example of grace at work in our lives. In order to heal wounds, the body has to create, and so must our souls. In order to heal from our wounds, we also have to create. We create rituals, we create art, meaning, written word, poetry, stories. Out of Paul's pain, he creates a brilliant and ironic piece of rhetoric that celebrates woundedness. And in so doing, he allows those of us who read it now to celebrate our woundedness. This was probably not the reaction of the intended audience, since he was actually criticizing them through these words. But beyond that first audience, for us now, as a second audience reading these words, they can have a different resonance. They can heal. My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. God's power is the force that heals the wounds sustained by living in this world, and not only heals them, but transforms them creatively so that those who hurt can also be healers of others. At the Peace Conference 2 weeks ago, I attended a workshop by two leaders from a group called Red Crearte, which loosely means the self-creation network, or the creating yourself network. And what they do is travel around the world and work with different communities to create liturgical resources, songs, prayers for worship that respond to the problems of our age. And they see this process as a collaborative one. So they don't create resources for communities, they create resources with communities and brainstorm together to come up with songs and prayers and poetry that no one of them by themselves could have created. And they led the group in that workshop in a creative exercise, which I would like to lead us in now as an act of creativity and healing in the face of our own woundedness as a community and as individuals. So we'll begin. Switch to my lapel mic. We will begin by naming, as a group, things in our lives, in our world, that threaten peace. It can be internal peace, it can be external peace, it can be in our city, in our world, in our lives. So say them out loud. What are things that threaten peace?
Gun violence.
Prejudice. Selfishness. Negative words. Ignorance. International politics.
illness. A couple more.
Fear.
Self-doubt.
Mean looks.
Mean looks.
Greed.
Pain. Greed.
Lack of understanding.
One more.
Stress.
Amen. All right, so take a minute to reflect on this list and any other words or thoughts that came into your mind. And what I want you to do is take out of your bulletins, there is a blank half sheet. And there are writing utensils on your way in. If you do not have one, Barb has them in the back. Just raise your hand and she can get you one. We are going to now take some time to write a creative response, your response to any of these, whatever calls your attention, whatever moves you, something on this list, something in your heart. What is your creative response to that in the world which undoes peace and which threatens peace? And I've asked Randy to play some music while we reflect and write. So please, take your time.
Thank you.
Would anyone like to share a word or words?
Knowledge.
Cooperation.
Kindness.
Imaginative. Love.
Artistic expression.
Amen.